Hi, it's the theme talk. I'm Josh Sexton. Jurgen Klopp has just held his pre-Brentford press conference, and joining me to chat to that are Mike Kearney, Lizzie Doyle and Fuad Hassan. There was a few sort of tougher questions for Jurgen Klopp, I think, after last night's performance. I always enjoy these press conferences just after a game, although obviously I'd much prefer a better result, but there's some really interesting things to come from it and to come from Jurgen Klopp. We're going to have Billy Grant coming up in the second part of the show, and then we'll do our usual team selections and score predictions in the third part. But Mike, I'll come to you first, because pretty much Klopp's first answer, he was asked about the sort of absence of Mane and Salah, and you know, whether it can excuse some of the performances last night, and he comes out and says one of the only ways to avoid these kind of questions is by scoring. Do we miss them? Yes, but we have had struggles even with Sadio Mo against 10 men. It's how can we do better with the team, and that's one of the things that I think sort of stands out last night, is that, you know, there's a bit of an argument that Jurgen Klopp's selection doesn't sort of lend its hand to how we deal without Sadio Mane and Mo Salah. And it might be a thing that he sort of builds a plane while flying over these next few games. But he's been stressing for the whole season that we've been prepared for this scenario. And then it felt like last night we probably weren't really prepared for the scenario.
No, not while we were watching it, not at all. And, you know, in theory, they're all good players, aren't they? We've seen Jota be brilliant. We've seen Firmino be brilliant. We've seen Saki have flashes and not really ever get going, but he scored goals in the League Cup this year. So there was a little bit of hope maybe that there was something we could build. But, you know, the evidence that we've seen of it so far, the 90 minutes that we got to see was quite unfairly for Saki and the rest of them. They're not the players that they're trying to replace. Their own players, and you should probably not ask them to be anything else but, and maybe we need to try and find a way around in the whole system, not just look at the front three, but how can we build up a midfield differently? How can we get the fullbacks interacting differently with players that they're probably not used to playing with all that often? If they would have done it now and again in training, but on a game-to-game basis, you know, Trent and Robertson, or even Tsimikas when he's fitted in, has generally always had one of Sadio and Mo in front of him, which probably looks different in terms of space, because, you know, it's either two men on the mat or they're taking two or three maybe away. And it's just, it's a completely different picture in the whole picture. We always say this about Klopp's teams, that are a bit like a machine, aren't they? You take Fabinho out a couple of seasons ago and you sort of see a little bit of a difference. You take Van Dijk out and you see a massive difference in our build-up. So there was always going to be not just the goals element going away from it, there was always going to be a shape thing, wasn't there, and a getting to know your phase, which I think we were patient with last night, but there was just no urgency, I don't think, and it felt quite slow, quite predictable, and it probably helped Arsenal that it was, because, you know, once it became that, then it was easier for them to deal with it.
Yeah, Lizzie, I'm probably playing devil's advocate a bit, but I think for years we've sort of looked at Liverpool and thought, if, you know, the plan A is so good that we don't need a plan B. And when I say a plan B, I don't necessarily mean, you know, a big striker that you can lump it up to or anything like that. I think that would have been the last thing we needed last night. But it feels like whenever Liverpool's, you know, as Mike says, because they are such a well-oiled machine, because the plan A is so good, but the plan A requires such sort of intricate parts to be together, as soon as you take a couple of those parts out, things just sort of don't look anywhere near as good, really. And that's where I wonder whether, you know, Jurgen Klopp and the people behind the scenes should just be looking at a bit more of a plan B, should be looking to change things when these sorts of, you know, things happen. And you know, it only happens every so often that your three best players or two of your best players go away to the African Cup of Nations. But I mean, you know, we've dealt with injuries, illness, all kinds of things down the years, and it feels like we've not dealt with it particularly well.
Yeah, it's not a shock that they've gone to African Cup of Nations. Like, they go every 2 years, do you know what I mean? So we need to be prepared for when they do. What's the backup plan? And yeah, they probably thought it would have worked a bit better. But I was speaking about it when we come off the ground last night. I was saying, the thing about Liverpool, I hope you understand why I'm going to bring City into this. I'm not trying to compare. Basically, the difference between Liverpool and City are, and it's a strength and a weakness for both sides, is basically you've got Liverpool, who've got, like you said, you've got such key, talented, arguably best in their position in the world players. And that's what makes us unique, and that's what makes us so unbelievably extra special. And believe me, I wouldn't change that for anything in the world. Now, the reason I bring up City is because last night I look at, like, say, what a Man City would have done in this situation, and what they do is they train the player for the position. So they very much, like, you're the player, you fit to this style and you fit to this position, rather than it being about us, who we've got Mo Salah and we play to his strengths, and we've got fullbacks who can play to their strengths because they're so good. And I think, like, the reason I brought that comparison in is just, I think it's a little bit apt in that that when you're trying to play the same sort of formation, the same type of football, but when you're so heavily reliant on individual skill and talent, like naturally you are going to get a drop off when you're putting someone like a Minamino, you know, out on the left or whatever. And for me, weirdly, like, I think what we did miss a little bit last night in terms of who was available or who we thought would be available was maybe the Divock-Origi option as well. And that having that focal point, having someone who's a bit unpredictable, who might scuff the ball a bit in the middle of the box in his feet, do you know what I mean? And mate, listen, maybe Divock-Origi was part, I imagine he was part of the options for this period without Salah and Mane, because I mean, we don't need to talk about him anymore. The fella's mad, isn't he? Like, he's not the best player in the world. However, what he can do, what he can come up with in certain games, and especially, like, you know, a game like last night where there's down to 10 men, the low block, you just never know. But I was a little bit... Listen, he's not beyond Chris. I was a little bit miffed that, like, you know, it just seemed that when the substitutes come on, all of a sudden it starts to feel like that was a, like, the right sort of decision, and like Oxlade-Chamberlain and Curtis both going a little bit more direct, and I felt like that felt like he was trying to do something different, but it felt a little bit too late on in the game for me. So God knows what we'll see against Brentford, but I think he'll have like a couple of questions now off the back of that game with those subs and how much they impacted the game when they come on.
Yeah, Phil, you don't want to underestimate this manager or these players at all, because, you know, they've given us no reason to doubt them in the past. But, you know, Lizzie mentions there about the idea of being prepared for these lads to go away for AFCON, and Klopp references in his press conference pretty much consistently throughout as well how difficult it is to play against low block teams. And I don't doubt that, but there's probably up to sort of like 14 teams in this league, or maybe even more than that, arguably 16 teams in this league who are going to play low block against Liverpool because of how good Liverpool are. And it just feels like, particularly in these circumstances where you do have a few of your main players missing, you're going to need to try and find other solutions. And it feels like last night, Liverpool just didn't really try to do that. They tried to find, you know, the sort of similar solutions in similar players. And you had Minamino and Diogo Jota, who I thought just smothered each other all game, to be honest. And I thought Jota came out the worst of that, because he wasn't able to get into the positions, because Minamino is probably just that little bit quicker off the mark and things like that. I think that's where Jurgen Klopp needs to look at it and sort of, you know, look at the players who he's putting in those positions that have been all the same positions for his plan A the whole time, and go, as Lizzie said before, who actually suits these positions, and make them play for those positions as opposed to the other way around.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, I think after the game and, you know, last night and this morning, there's been a lot of chat, isn't there, about, you know, maybe them going down to 10 men. It's probably the worst thing that could have happened in that game in terms of, you know, what this Liverpool side was doing. And I think from like a bigger perspective, it's probably maybe the worst thing that could have happened in the bigger picture for this kind of group of players who are now just starting this period, you know, these next few games without Salah and Mane. Because, you know, I think I might be in the minority in this, and obviously watching it on TV, you get a little bit of a different kind of impression of the game. But I did feel at the beginning, you know, when it was 11, you know, Liverpool were building up a little bit of a head of steam, especially down the left. You know, they were getting in. There was a clear plan to get crosses in. Minamino looked sharp in the little spaces. And, you know, Arsenal were scuffing clearances. It did feel like, obviously, they're going to be dangerous on the break. It did feel like there was something happening. There was a little bit of a plan. And, you know, we talk about this Liverpool side in the past being really, really good problem solvers on the pitch. You know, you go back to the league winning season. There's so many moments where you can just see Liverpool figuring out things and knowing, you know, game management in the various stages that they need to do. It's really hard if you're a group of players, and the manager references in the conference today, it's really difficult if you haven't played with each other to then sort of, you know, you're coming up against this new challenge, and you do wonder, you know, how much do they prepare, you know, against Arsenal, obviously preparations game by game, how much do they prepare for those sort of scenarios? I'm assuming they sort of prepared for a little bit of a mad game, a little bit of an intense game, which it looked like it was going to be at the beginning. Backwards and forwards a little bit, and, you know, for them to solve those issues on the pitch, I think it's really difficult for them, because, you know, like we said, Minamino, yes, he's been good in this competition, but how much has he played? How much has he played with the players around him? And, you know, when you have players in certain positions, and this is not to call them out because everyone's going to have their off games, but, you know, Trent was just not on it. I think it's as simple as that. You know, this is a period where you really need all those sort of players, especially out wide, especially with the fullbacks being the natural players that give a little bit of whiff. You need them to be at their best. And, you know, when you have different parts of the team that, you know, you generally need to work well when you do have your full team and when you have your full squad not quite firing, then it's a lot to ask for the front players. And there was a lot, you know, a lot of just giving the ball and kind of, you know, you do something with it kind of thing, which maybe works with Mane and Salah, but it's not quite the same thing when you have players, like you said, who are getting in each other's way. So I think there's a little bit of kind of perspective needed on all of that. And I just do hope that there is a little bit of a plan in terms of, you know, getting Jota down the middle, for example, a bit more, and you know, playing to the individual players' strengths a little bit more, and with the front two, especially that we have in Firmino and Jota in the next few games, because I think that's the only way we will look like scoring goals, and it's the best way to kind of move forward in this period.
Can I just say, Josh? Sorry, I just think on the preparation thing, like another thing I felt last night is, it's very clear that these probably haven't trained as much as they'd like. It very much looked like a team that hadn't trained together. And it's not, I don't know the ins and outs about the COVID outbreak and when things reopened and stuff, but it's probably hampered a lot of maybe the time they would have spent. I mean, I think there was one or two games, I think, when just before Manny and Salah left, we saw a bit of a combination of the players on the pitch last night, the front three. I think like they would have liked a lot more time on the training pitch to go, right, okay, how is this front three going to work? Because we've got, you know, that three, we know Divock's injured, so you're going to be the three. How is it going to work? And they really look like a team who didn't have that. And even on Trent, listen, again, I'm not a bloody scientist, but like the lads had COVID, do you know what I mean? Who knows how bad he's had it? I don't know. But even if you've, you know, is he asymptomatic? You know what it's like when you're an athlete and your whole job is to be at your peak, you know, optimal fitness, and you're staying in your house for 7 to 10 days, like that completely takes away as well. So I'm not trying to excuse, because I agree, I don't think he was great. However, I think it was quite obvious that was a factor as well last night. And I hope maybe a bit of the fitness has come back a little bit. And I hope that was, it sounds awful to say, but a bit of a training ground exercise for Sunday as well.
Yeah, and if you're looking for the manager's words to instill confidence, Mike, I'll read out this sort of last quote, which it was in reference to the absence of Mo Salah and Sadio Mane. Again, it sort of came full circle in the press conference, but he says, "Last night we didn't miss pace, that wasn't the problem. There was no space to use that, we just have to build on how we start. We have to play between the lines, quick thinking, more important than quick running. We are here to find solutions." And that to me, I don't know whether that hints that, you know, there's maybe other players in the squad that he thinks could be doing that, as, you know, not necessarily being quick running, but quick thinking and playing between the lines, stuff like that. It feels like, you know, if that is the solution to this, then we do have a few players in the squad who can do that. And I suppose it's up to the manager to find those solutions. And he clearly thinks that we have that in the squad without Mo Salah and Sadio Mane, because they must be the ones that he's referring to when he says that we don't miss the pace.
Yeah, he's probably sort of getting that, a little bit of bravery, isn't he? Or a little bit of taking it up on your own shoulder, responsibility on, if it isn't going right, to try and do something different, to try and take control of it more. I think the control things, you know, we had a lot of the ball last night, but we also had a bit of stagnance in the options. And, you know, we're missing quite a few players, not just, you know, the Salah and Mane thing. You know, you think about Thiago and the control he brings that people don't really talk about. They always seem to talk about his passing, which is brilliant, yeah. But the control and the calmness, I think that was what we were probably lacking last night. And when you haven't got, you can sometimes get away with not having both of them, but one of them at now and again, you can have a little bit of panic on, but then someone could do something brilliant or just out of the ordinary. And then, you know, even if that's not coming off, if you just stay calm, you'll probably get a chance. And at times last night, I just didn't think we'd work one. We do end up working one, don't we? Right at the end with Minamino. You know, he'll know it's a bad miss. No one will need to tell him that. He was the one who hit the ball, so he'll know he should do better. So, in a way, it's not the end of the world. I mean, it does feel... it feels more disappointing, doesn't it? Because they go down to 10 men and we should be really putting a tighter bed. We've seen Chelsea do it to Tottenham without them going down to 10 men. You know, a goal or two in your home leg should see you through. I think that's why... with the view to looking forward to, you know, Brentford, the second leg, and then Palace the week after, you know, it's because it's so close after yet last night that we're all a little bit, what's going to happen here? We need some, I would say anyway, I think you'd be starting to look now at, okay, let's go a bit horses for courses over the next couple of games and just get through. And maybe that's what I'd do, but maybe Klopp will think, well, actually, I'll just stick as close to plan A as possible, because there was circumstances mitigating last night that were, wasn't just happening, and we'll see what Sunday brings in terms of his team selection and the attitudes of the players, because I'm sure they'll know that it was a wasted chance last night, and they need to be better next game out.
Yeah, Lizzie, I'll come back to you on this because you sort of raised this just before we started the show. And, you know, Mike mentions Thiago there, and he's obviously a big miss for this team. And for this midfield in particular, I think he seems to just give you something different in there. And I think, you know, there'll be a lot of people who are looking at that midfield of Fabinho, Henderson and Milner that started last night and not feeling particularly inspired. And it's dead interesting in his press conference as well that Jurgen Klopp refers to Naby Keita as one of the best midfielders that he's seen on his day, he says, which I just find interesting because he clearly thinks that, you know, Naby Keita and probably Thiago are those kind of options that he has in midfield that can break the lines a bit more, that have that bit more quick thinking. But, you know, I'd be looking at like Curtis Jones and Oxlade-Chamberlain, even Harvey Elliott, who's on his way back, and saying that they're also players who can bring that to the side. And it's probably, you know, as Mike says, you go a bit horse for course now, but it's about Jurgen Klopp finding the way to get those players in there and get the best out of them then, because as we say, there's going to be loads more teams who play low block against Liverpool during this spell.
Yeah, definitely. And listen, like, I love James Milner, I really do. However, I just feel like that wasn't the game for him to start last night. I really thought he'd do Curtis, or even Oxlade-Chamberlain. And listen, the Ox has put himself in good contention this season. You know, when he's come in and filled in, like, he's not been absolutely well beaten, but I tell you what, you know, there's been times where his name's been above Naby Keita in terms of the picking lists, and that goes to say everything if Klopp is calling him, you know, one of the best midfielders he's seen on his day. I'm a bit surprised by his selection in that, like, that felt like quite a defensive sort of midfield last night. And you're at home, first leg, like, naturally, you know, for a fact that going away to the Emirates is going to be, you know, a much harder task. You don't know what players they're going to have back by then. You know, they were struggling with injuries. They had literally no midfield coming into this one, Arsenal, and this felt like the time to just really go for it. And I found it a bit confusing why he did choose Milner over them. But you are right in Curtis and Oxlade-Chamberlain. Like I say, when they come on last night, everything just seemed a little bit more attacking, a little bit more like they were taking risks. There was a moment where Oxlade-Chamberlain just picked up the ball and, God forbid, he ran. He just ran through the midfield. And I was like, finally, listen, a shot come to nothing. But, you know, it just felt like, why is no one doing this? And like I say, just forcing an error, forcing a mistake, those lads will do that. And I hope to see them be involved a little bit more. And please know that is not a knock on James Milner. Like, I still believe that there is a place for James Milner in this squad. Whether that's starting on in certain games or coming on for 15 and 20 in certain moments, I'm all for James Milner. However, I think what that midfield showed last night, you know, a bit of a lack of, I'm going to say the word dynamism and say it with, is that right? Are we going for it? Wait, I wasn't sure if that was like the right word. So I should have said with more confidence and I would have got away with it. And I think that's what we lacked last night. And I'm hoping maybe, like you said, we've seen Oxlade-Chamberlain come in that midfield and do quite well already this season. So he's hoping he chooses one of those options while, you know, Keita and Thiago aren't there.
I'm going to forgive you, Lizzie, because you must have been forgetting about Joel Matip's amazing runs through the midfield.
What a fella.
Well,
he had a shot as well, didn't he?
Yeah, well, yeah. Oh, my God. Honestly, I was saying, like, I've been building up that moment in my head for 4 years and then I just literally hit the back of the cop. What a mad fella. I just wonder whether he'd be tempted to look at this next run of games and start to think about maybe tweaking the shape. We've talked about getting these kinds of players, you know, on the ball more, the Curtis Jones and the Oxlade-Chamberlains when teams are playing low block, and I just wonder whether he starts to look to be a bit more flexible with his shape in order to get the best out of those players in particular, because I think, you know, the foundation that the other lads are going to provide you, you know, that back four are not going to concede many goals, Fabinho and Henderson in midfield, you know exactly what they're going to give you. It's more about those forward lads now getting them the best opportunity to be able to play in between the lines, to be able to display quick thinking and to be able to get in between teams who are sort of playing low block. And that's where I wonder whether, you know, he does look to a diamond or something where he can play a proper number 10, he can play Jota and Firmino in more natural positions and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one big thing with the diamond, if you go with that, is the fact that Minamino, you know, gets utilized to his kind of powers and to his strengths, because, you know, there's so much natural kind of number 10 in him. And, you know, the player that we saw at Salzburg was very much that sort of player. So that there is an argument that, you know, you can get the best out of him. And then that then opens up the idea of, you know, Jota and Firmino kind of being a bit of a two and playing off each other a bit more. He constantly talks about, doesn't he, the manager, about the spaces in between the lines and getting in those pockets. And that's how you break down these sort of sides. And, you know, a lot of that, I think back in the last few games, and I know Liverpool have struggled this season breaking down low blocks. And, you know, the one comes to mind, I can't remember who it was against, but Salah wins a penalty, for example. And I know you don't have that same kind of danger and you don't have him or Mane kind of pulling people apart, but you know, I looked at, for that example, that Arsenal back line, you know, individually, those three centre halves are not great. You know, Gabriel has a mistake in him. And if we could have just been able to kind of isolate these players, force them to make a little bit of a decision, you know, stick a foot out here and there, then, you know, you can win penalties, create a little bit of chaos. I think that's the thing that's needed against these sides. Lizzie mentioned Chamberlain's run. You know, you just sort of start asking different questions because, you know, we've seen it, you know, time and time again, where you fall into this kind of routine of ball going out wide and a cross coming in. And it's very easy for, you know, your 6 foot three centre halves to head those away all day long. So, yeah, I think the shape thing might just help a couple of players kind of being utilised, you know, with their kind of strengths and using them to our advantage a bit more. And you know, then that maybe does create a bit more space for the likes of, you know, your Trents and Robertsons to kind of to get down the byline and get crosses in and pullbacks in. Because I just think, you know, Liverpool have when they have played well against sides like that, you know, precision's been the main thing, you know, being really quick and being really precise. And that's, you know, all nice and easy to say when you've got, you know, a Mo Salah making runs and you've got a fullback being really worried about a Mo Salah making runs and, you know, Trent being able to find them. But if you don't quite have that, I think you've just got to be, you know, you need to kind of give the license to your players. And I'm not saying the manager hasn't. You need to give the license to the likes of Curtis Jones to just go and beat a man or Chamberlain to go and beat a man. And, you know, there were a few wild shots at the end of the game yesterday. And, you know, I could hear, you know, the cop kind of groaning about it. And, you know, if I was there, I'd probably be doing the same. But you sort of think, well, you know, what else can you do, really? And what else, you know, what else can you expect them to do in that situation? Because they've sort of run out of ideas. And maybe that is sort of the way where, you know, you do start doing things a little bit crazy and trying to create confusion in defences and low blocks, especially against the next couple of teams that we're coming up against.
Yeah, well, that feels like enough dissection of last night. I'm going to go take a few deep breaths. And obviously, it goes without saying, we're all hoping for much better on Sunday. And to find out more about Brentford, we'll hand you over now for the opposition view.
Joined by Billy Grant from Besotted to have a chat about the, frankly, mildly exciting Brentford over the course of the season. I'm going to come on to the sadness, Billy. You said you were worried you were going to be tongue-tied, which I couldn't see coming. But I'm going to come on to the sadness of the game against Southampton in a second or two. But I want to talk about a couple of other things I've seen, which is a football club completely committed to enjoying itself. The victory against Watford was a ground that was just in absolute ferment by the end of it. I mean, I thought those players may never leave the pitch. And that's been the way Brentford have gone about the business all season, isn't it? You know, there appears to be such a bond there between these footballers, the way they go about things, the way in which they're managed, the manager himself, and this crowd, which is absolutely loving every single minute of every single game that it gets to see played in the Premier League.
Yeah, no, it's true. Now, we are definitely enjoying it. Listen, I think we've come into the league with quite low expectations, and this is not a disrespect to ourselves. So what's happened is it has enabled us to actually enjoy it even more. So the fact, like I said, we got the results against the Arsenal, the West Ham, the Everton, which, like I said, you guys and girls would have really loved that one as well. You know, you know. So just things like that has just made it really good. And also, like I said, the we're starting to get this league a little bit now. We realise that if you like lose four matches, it doesn't seem to be too much of a problem. It's more of a problem if you like lose 9 or 10 in a row. And I'm not saying that, you know, because we might get into that spot. So I think we're sort of managing our expectations. So every time that we get a win, we're just actually like really enjoying it. So like I said to you, that Watford win was great, you know, and that's when, you know, we had the, you know, all the Hey Jude and everything like that, yep. You know, which is the Brentford anthem when I was a kid, and they used to sing that then, and that's all come back now. So that's been great. And like, you know, and then the Free From Desire is all, you know, which is a bit of an old school sort of kind of, you know, that was, you know, ironically, actually, that came from Will Griggs on Fire. And we actually sold Will Grigg because he didn't think he was good enough for us. And we ended up sort of selling him in a roundabout way to Wigan via MK Dons. And so he ends up leaving. We actually got a bit of money for him. And then he goes off and then he scores all these goals. And then the song came about when he left us, like, you know. So it's a bit of an irony that he's come back, that we're sort of singing the Will Grigg song for one of our own players who replaced Will Grigg years later. So, yeah, we're having a lot of fun. And I'll tell you, the Aston Villa game on New Year's Day was actually quite a lot of fun as well, because we had a few Villa fans in with us. We don't normally kind of allow, you know, sort of kind of opposition fans to come in. More that it's just a little bit uncomfortable for them being in an end where everyone's singing it, that it's so obvious that you're not, you know, a Brentford fan when you're sort of standing there po-faced, like, you know, while everyone's sort of kind of waving their scarves and going absolutely bonkers. But we had a couple of my mates who came in, and we sort of kind of chatted them after the game, and they were just like, oh my God, you absolutely kippered us there. You know, we kind of just like, you just, I don't know how you robbed us of the points there, but, you know, and it's just like little moments like that, which kind of make it kind of lot of work, you know, worthwhile. And after that Villa game, and this is really bad, I just said, to be quite honest with you, I don't think we need to win another game till Newcastle, which is at the end of February now. And that's kind of, you know, the managing of the expectations they are. So coming to Liverpool as we are at the weekend, it's almost a free hit for us. We absolutely expect nothing. But if you actually get a little something, it actually makes it more fun.
Well, this is the, when you told me before about the Premier League and the winning and how, you know, where it moves in the table and the way the table looks. And this is the really interesting thing is that you do end up with the sense of the free hit, the sense of the bonus point. You know, I'd probably argue earlier in the season, Brentford, before a ball was kicked when Liverpool went to Brentford, would have had that conversation and said, well, we'll get what we'll get and it's absolutely fine and we'll all enjoy ourselves. And then by about 85, prepared to absolutely die in a ditch for that point. And I'm, you know, I've been there, I know that journey. And that to me is why I think Brentford do look as though they're enjoying it. But it is this, every single win, almost every single point is almost a bonus point because of the points that are already on the board. Every single one of them makes every game more fun in the future and can be relaxed and enjoyed. And guess what? These are good players and they're getting some good results.
Yeah, that's right. And I tell you what's, you know, it's giving us a little bit of a punch in the belly a little bit, is that we got the injuries. And that's really, it actually really has suckered us. It really has. And I didn't think they would do. I really didn't, because I just thought, you know, you get injuries, you put other players, you replace them. But just I just realised how important that first team is. And it also made me realise how sort of probably weak we are as a squad. If you compare it to other teams when they bring players off the bench, you know what they can do. And this is not a disrespect to our players at all. This is not a disrespect to them at all. It's just a fact. But the plus side of it is that we've actually kind of managed to deal with it. So what we've done is that at the beginning, we had this real cavalier and, like, you know, people sort of saying, oh my God, Brentford, a really exciting side. Whereas, and you know, we got the results against you and all these other teams. Whereas recently, we've had to pretty much sort of kind of cobble results together. And it's been finger in the dam. And we haven't necessarily been as pretty or necessarily as exciting. We've been exciting as a team who might fight to the last minute. And not even all the games, because we've been really, I mean, Southampton, we'll talk about that later. I mean, we were just terrible there, you know. But some games, you know, we carry on fighting. And it's almost like more about our spirit and what we're about. With the tools that we've got, you know, we're not going to deny that, you know, the goalkeeper that we've got, who's our second in line goalkeeper. Again, I'm not disrespecting him as a person, but he's been parachuted in out of the blue, and we've asked him to be David Raya, who's an absolutely fantastic sweeper keeper, and he's not David Raya, and he's not a sweeper keeper, and he's making mistakes, and those mistakes sort of kind of resound through the team, and our defence is obviously not as confident as it should be, and they're all making mistakes, so I just didn't realise how much of an impact that would make. So we've almost like, we've changed our kind of view from day one. Day one, we thought, if we can finish 17th, we'll be delighted. Then after that, we thought, we're doing quite well now. If we can finish mid-tail, we'll be delighted. And now we're going back to like, if we can finish 17th again, we'll be delighted. So it's the shifting kind of barometer that keeps on moving like the needle from left to right all the time.
You mentioned the keeper there. The Raya was excellent in the 3-3, and that's a strange thing to say. You know, a goalkeeper concedes three goals. People shouldn't be knocking around saying he was excellent, but the truth of the matter is that he was, and he plays ever so well, and he's very good for Brentford in key moments. You mentioned the subkeeper. Is he a concern then for Brentford supporters? Because whenever I've sort of caught him, he's looked all right to me. Alvaro Fernandez, he's looked like a player who knows what he's about. You know, I'm not saying he's not playing like the Wolves keeper is, who seems to save everything at times. Is he all right, or are you concerned with him, a player like him, coming to Anfield?
There are concerns. He is getting better, and I think, you know, with a player like that, what you would have normally have done is that he would have been in the squad for a season or two seasons, playing, you know, League Cup games, playing different games, you know, and then he'd get the feel for it. But he literally was parachuted into the side. So yeah, we have seen improvements week on week, but then, you know, we have to ask the question. He's like, you know, where are we at now? He's on loan, so we've actually got him on loan. Whether or not we're going to actually buy him, there's a rumour saying that he's $10 million or 10 million euros if we have to buy him. So there's a question mark there. Now, interestingly, what we did is that we actually went out and got another loan keeper in from FC Michelin, which is our sister club, inverted commas, or the club that our owner, he owns in Denmark, okay, with the Danish champions, and his name's Lossel, and he used to play for Huddersfield, and I think he also played for Everton as well.
He did.
Right? Now, we've got him in, and we've been told 100% that he's coming as a second choice keeper to Fernandes, who's in goal. And I thought, okay, because Raya's not going to be back for a couple of months. He actually had his first training session the other day, and he turned up in a dinosaur outfit, as you do at Brentford, you know what I'm saying, on the training pitch, and he sort of kind of just dinosaur was running around the pitch, and all the players are really confused. They had no idea who it was, and he sort of unzipped it, and he's like, hey, it's me, it's David Raya. Okay, that's interesting. But anyway, so David Raya's got a couple of months to his back out. So Fernandes and Rossell between themselves are going to do it. Now, Rossell played against Port Vale in the Cup. And I saw a big difference in the fact that you could just see that he just knew what he's doing. He's pointing at people, pointing at the spot, pointing at the referee, you know, pointing everywhere, as sort of kind of, you know, keepers with a bit of experience do. And to me, it just felt like he knew and he was commanding, even though it's his only very first game. He made a little bit of mistake in the second half, but I just thought, you know, I wonder if he's going to pop up at some stage and kind of like, you know, between him and Fernandes are going to sort of share this goalkeeping kind of time, you know. And to me, I'm not going to say 100%, but, you know, David Lane, who does Besotted, you know, we do it together, and he says, I wouldn't surprise me if Lossell just turns up at Anfield on Sunday, because, you know, we need a real commanding keeper. And, you know, there's an argument to say that there was a couple of mistakes possibly made in the Southampton game by the keeper, Cooper, where he didn't sort of command where he should have done, or he should have maybe dived and got the ball where he should have done. But he wasn't the only person that made a mistake at Southampton. About another 9 players did as well. So I'm not putting all the blame on him. But let's see how it goes. I'm not 100% confident with him at the helm. And I used to be a goalkeeper, and not a very good goalkeeper, so I know what it's like to be not a very good goalkeeper with players in front of you, because they do like look at you and just sort of give you all sorts of grief, like, you know, when you make the mistakes.
one I want to talk about, because we know you said before about we know what this Brentford first 11 is, broadly speaking. One who was missed was Ayer at the back. He comes back for the 4-1 against Southampton. Do you think he was rushed back? You know, was he at the scene of any crimes there? Or do you think that's just sort of coincidence? Because again, he was another one who I thought played really, really well against Liverpool earlier in the season. Whenever I've caught him this season, I've thought he looks like a really good player. Was there an element maybe even being rushed back, or is it just simply one of them?
No, he actually came back against Port Vale in the Cup on Saturday, and I went to Port Vale. Quite a few of us went to Port Vale because it was reminiscent of our old school days. We just thought, oh, we feel more at home here, like, you know. So we went to Port Vale, and it was a resounding victory. The Bees were completely in control. Port Vale, yes, they had a little section in the second half where they, you know, they rallied as such, but they only had one shot on target, and they scored that as well. And it's a really good goal they scored. But the one thing that I'd note, again, it's one of those things where, you know what it is, when something's missing and then all of a sudden it goes back in and you think, oh, I remember that now. Mm. And he's obviously been out for so long, you forget it. And I think I has been out since pretty much around about October as well. And that's when another time that we sort of capitulated, I said, turn around to Laney, I said, oh my God, I completely forgot what a brilliant player he is. I said, he's on another level. And I said, and we kind of base our football around him. And if he's not in there, the other players struggle to do what he does. He literally picks the ball up, and before you know it, he's in the other penalty area, you know, and he's just doing stuff. And he's also so cool and calm and composed on the ball. So great against Port Vale. Okay, obviously Port Vale, second division, but playing great football. So we did very well then. Southampton, different kettle of fish. They came to us with a game plan, and we were literally all over the place, you know, in many different places. And you can argue that I may not have been fully fit. You know, so he might not be 100% fit. And
Saturday to Tuesday is a turnaround, a bit of pressure, isn't it? Saturday, Tuesday, there's not a big gap between those two games.
No. So, back to that, Ayer did make us look like old school, original, beginning of the season Brentford. So what I will say is that we've got one extra day than you have for a start, because you've got a game on the Thursday. So we've got an extra day training. I'm hoping that, you know, Thomas will get them back in the training session. He'll get them back to what they're like. And also the other thing is, what I'll say is that there's some really weird, we've got a weirdness going on with Brentford. We seem to struggle against Norwich. We lost against them. Burnley, we lost against them. Newcastle 3-0, brilliant 3-0 game that was as well. But, you know, everyone thought, yeah, we'll get points from them. And then we've got, you know, Southampton again, and we got smashed up by them. But then, you know, Man City come and they struggled to beat us. You know, Chelsea have been hanging on for dear life against us. We had a great game against you, Arsenal, West Ham. So I don't know if we're a sort of a raise your game type team. So that's why I said I've got no idea what's going to happen on Saturday. They may play like flipping 11 Maradonas, like, you know what I'm saying, on the pitch on Sunday.
So go on, give us a prediction, because it's not a surprise to listeners. I've just done a chat for Besotted there, and you said to me, "Is there any chance? Do you think there's any chance Brentford gets something?" And I said, "Yeah, there is. You know, it's firstly it's a game of footy, but also secondly, this is a Liverpool side that's going to have a bit of a funny." Going to have a bit of a funny adjustment period during the Africa Cup of Nations. So, do you think there is a chance Brentford gets something? What is your prediction?
My prediction is, right, that 3,000, about 1,500 Brentford fans are going to be up in Liverpool for the weekend, okay? So we're going to get lots of beer and gin and tonics and whatever else we drink and food, and we're going to have lots of laughs, and that's kind of where our key is at. Like I said to you, you know I say kick football out of football, and we laughed about that in the lower divisions. I think the last few games that we've been playing recently, where we have got no idea when they've got to get a result or not, we've actually resorted back to really enjoying ourselves before the game and after the game, and if we get anything during the game, it's a bonus. So I think with Liverpool, trust me, we're going to have a wicked weekend. I'm going up on Friday, like I said to you. Like I said, Jim, I've got my Bella and her Bella's mates, two teammates that they're coming up with. So I've got Io, Spanish Dave, and Ben as well, who are coming up, and they're going to be plonked in the Liverpool end. Thank you very much, John, for that. They're very, very happy about that. Io's first game in the Kop. He's a Liverpool fan, so he's absolutely made up for coming up there as well. So like I said to you, we've got Bees and Liverpool fans going up there together. We're going to have a big drink Saturday night. Hopefully we'll meet up with you, yep, you crew, you know, the Spirit of Shankly crew and all that lot. And that's all I can predict, that we're going to have a lot of fun. On the Sunday, I've got no idea what's going to happen with us, who's going to turn up. I would like to think that we will raise our game like we seem to do against teams like Liverpool. And if we do that, then I would say that we'll come away with a gracious 3-0 defeat, and I'll be very happy. No, I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw. I'm going to go out on the edge on this one. I'm going to go 1-1, which I think is, I'll be delighted if it's 1-1. I tell you, just score a goal and we can cheer that.
Let's get back over to Josh.
Yeah, nice one to Billy there. In terms of team selection for this one then, Mike, there was a little bit of sort of half injury news. He said that Robertson, Virgil and Milner had all come through last night with knocks, but the medical department said they would be fine. So it seems like we're going to have the same squad to pick from as we did last night. Given all that we spoke about in the first part in terms of whether the manager does make any changes to this one, I'm interested to know. We'll start with the defence first. That feels like probably the easiest one to sort of pick from, I think. Robert, it's the second game that Robertson's come through where he's potentially had a knock. I suppose he becomes the one where you look at and say, do you just bring Tsimikas back in for this one, or whether you just be going again with that same back four?
That's the main question mark, isn't it? How much of a knock is it? We're fine, aren't we, with Tsimikas playing no matter what? So if it's a knock that we shouldn't rush him into and lose him for further down the line in the season, then we're absolutely fine with that change, aren't we? It's then you're looking at Brentford, aren't you, and what we're going to get from them. And what we got from them in the first game was being a lot of direct play, a lot of fighting for the ball and stuff like that. So I would imagine you'll still see Joel comes off last night, doesn't he, and gets a rest. Or like a couple of minutes off, maybe just for fitness after his COVID issues and lack of training. I'd be shocked to see more than two changes at the back. I think, you know, as much as we mentioned Trent not having his best night, and maybe that's fitness related, training related, whatever that is, I think he'll probably go as solid as we can there and as consistent as we can. If Robertson comes through, he probably plays. You know, that feels like that's where we've got the least problems at the moment, isn't it? So that's pretty much as it's going to be, and we'll be happy with that. And it's further forward, isn't it, midfield? And if it's a front three or a different shape, we don't know quite how the rest will fit in there yet.
Yeah, Lizzie, I wonder, something Mike said there, which I think is quite interesting, really, is just how direct Brentford were last time. And Klopp was talking about in his press conference that one of the things we probably didn't do so well last time was was second balls. But if I think back to that Brentford away game, I can't remember, you know, a particularly strong game from Joel Matip, to be honest. I don't know if I'm just misremembering that. So I wonder whether, you know, as much as there's an argument that Robertson, if he's come through two games with consecutive knocks, you maybe bring Tsimikas in. I wonder whether he looks to Konaté again and says, well, if Ivan Toney is going to be the target man and they're going to play off him and that kind of thing, you bring in Konaté because you know that Konaté is going to give him a bit more of a physical battle, because you saw it last time that Toney was just playing off Matip and seeing him as the weakness.
Yeah, and to be honest, I think, do you know what? I'm all right, no matter what game it is, sort of swapping Matip for Konaté now. Like, I'm quite comfortable. And I think you're right. I mean, I've just literally been looking at Ivan Toney's numbers there, because I remember when they played City in December and, like, they gave them a real good game, didn't they? Like, they were everywhere. And that Ivan Toney, God, that sounds like my dad then, that Ivan Toney, just like he's a fella down the road. You know that Ivan Toney? He goes to shop. But, like, honestly, some of his numbers are absolutely ridiculous, especially in, like, aerial duels. It seems to be the one which sticks out for me. So there needs to be someone who can deal with him. Now, I'm not going to jinx anything, but just stats-wise, he hasn't scored since the start of December. He hasn't scored a lot. However,
come on, he
hasn't scored. Listen, I'm just relaying facts. I'm relaying facts. That's all I'm saying. But that doesn't mean that they're going to make it easy. And that other, the other lads who played against us, it was at Mbeumo.
Yeah,
I thought he was really good. So we know they can give us a game. And like I say, watching that Man City game, yeah, they did run out of a bit of steam. But they were unlucky. Like, they were unlucky. And that's against, let's be honest, at this moment, the best team in the league. So I'm confident. I'm always confident with Liverpool playing at home. But I'm quite relaxed whether it's Konaté or Matip. But it wouldn't surprise me. Wouldn't surprise me maybe if he does. He brought Matip off last night, didn't he? So to me, that feels like he's maybe thinking about Matip, because surely just let him play the full 90, if not. Do you know what I mean? That's my thinking. And listen, got like touch wood. Who knows what these knocks could mean? If he doesn't want to risk Virgil, we could be seeing Konaté and Matip for all that we know. But we also need to tighten up in sort of set pieces as well, because I think that's a big weakness with Brentford. They'll be looking for set pieces, and that'll be where they're looking to hurt us.
So I'm going to play devil's advocate slightly again. As Lizzie mentions there, he brings off Joel Matip last night and brings on Joe Gomez, and Lizzie referenced that City game as well. And one of the things that Brentford did well in that game was getting second man runners in behind and playing off Ivan Toney. I just wonder whether he looks to build up Gomez's minutes last night, because he's thinking he needs a bit of that recovery pace almost, particularly if Liverpool are going to play the usual high line, which you'd expect that they do. Maybe he looks to go and throw Joe Gomez into this one. He's like the discounted option in all of our centre half things, isn't he?
I know, I've missed him. It was good to see him out again yesterday, because he's just not been there for, I can't remember the last time I've seen him play. So, you know, you kind of forget you've got, you know, a world-class centre-half option there that's sort of kind of been missing in amongst the three that have played most of the season and generally done pretty well. So, yeah, you know, that is an interesting thing, I think, because, you know, there was a very, very obviously clear plan, wasn't there, in that home game at Brentford for them to kind of target Trent and kind of overload that side a little bit. So yeah, there might be a little argument for that. I do wonder I don't think you'd go with Konaté. I do think you just see Matip and Van Dijk again. I think it's a little bit too soon maybe for Gomez to get in, but I wouldn't be against it. I think that's the thing I always find myself saying with our centre half options when it comes to selecting them. There's not really any of them that I wouldn't feel comfortable with coming in. And in any situation, really, because they've all shown that they can. And there's a few combinations, quietly, there's a few combinations there that look like they've been working over the last kind of few months this season as a whole. So, yeah, I wouldn't be against whatever he really goes for in that sense. It is going to be physical, though, that I think that's the big thing. And I do just wonder, you know, midfield-wise, you know, you're definitely going to see, I think, Fabinho and Henderson there again, just because there will be a threat. I just go back to kind of the idea of, you know, Jota and Firmino being the two that you just got to find a way of really getting the best out of. I thought in that League Cup Leicester game, it looked like there might have been a little bit of a thing going on there where, you know, they had a little bit of a partnership. They looked good. There were a few little good combination plays in that game. And if we can just get a little bit of that again, and I know the low block and everything kind of changes the whole kind of your whole kind of approach to a game like that. But I think everything should really be geared towards getting them to as good as you want, because as best as you can, because, you know, you can be solid at the back. We've got the options to be solid at the back. But I think what you do further up the pitch should really kind of all or focus on getting the best out of them too as much as you can.
Yeah, we'll move on to the midfield then, Mike. And I'd sort of tease to you lot in the break of the show that I'd be tempted to do something mad. And I'm sort of casting my mind back to Bournemouth away when I think about a diamond that Liverpool could play. And I'm sure in that game we saw Chamberlain at the tip of that diamond. I think at times when we played diamond in the past as well, we've seen Naby Keita on the left of it. And to recreate that, I'm going to go with a diamond in midfield where I play Curtis Jones off the left and Oxlade-Chamberlain at the tip of that. And I just think it gives you all the things that we were saying in that first part. And it packs the midfield as well and gets literal bodies in there. But, you know, in terms of the quick thinking and all those sorts of things that Jurgen Klopp was looking for, I think it would give you that. I don't know if I can tempt you on that, Mike, as well.
There's not much tempting need, Josh, to be honest. It feels like it's I know you're saying it's mad, but it just feels as if why not try not something that's, you know, I said before, we'd be a bit daft to try and ask people to do something that Mo Salah can do, because, you know, he's the best player in the world. So if you haven't got the best player in the world available because he's at a tournament he was always going to be at, then try to do something different with the players we've got. We've got unbelievable quality in Jota and Firmino. We've seen Jones and how excited he can be. You know, Chamberlain, as Lizzie was saying before, you know, he's always been there or thereabouts this season. There was a time where I thought he was playing himself into it a little bit, and it was starting to look a bit painful watching him do it, but he got there and he got himself, you know, into a really good rhythm. So to change to a diamond, it's not a million miles away from what we do when we play a front three of Firmino, Salah and Mane anyway, because Firmino is the one dropping deep and the other two are cutting in and making runs. It's sort of not a million miles away to imagine that we should do something like that. Or even if it, you know, if we don't do that, maybe a 4-2-3-1 where you've got Jota, because when Jota normally plays number nine with the other two, he's not doing the dropping in that Firmino does. And you can sort of let them be having like 1-2s in and around the box. Whoever the fullbacks are can be, you know, pushing up and making numbers in the attack as well as, you know, either getting the byline. It's a case of trying new things that Brentford probably won't expect. You know, they know what we are because we played against them while we had all the front three available anyway. So they'll know what they did in for a tough game. Like, you know, Jota scored against them. They know it's going to be tough. It's, you know, we are missing who we're missing, but we're still Liverpool, who can, on the day, which is another thing Klopp said about Keita, isn't it? On the day, we know all these players can really turn it on. So it's trying to get as many of them to have their day as possible, isn't it? And if that requires a change of shape, then I'm all for it.
Lizzie, can I tempt you on my diamond diddle there?
Love a diamond diddle. Who doesn't love a diamond diddle? I'd like to see something a bit different. My sort of concern, in the nicest way possible, more because I think of the type of game it'll be. My sort of concern is Minamino, in that it's physical. And even last night, there's a lot of time he gets shoved off the ball quite a lot, and he loses the ball quite a lot when it comes to a physical battle. And I do think that's a little bit to do with what we've sort of seen in the past, which is how quickly can he sort of adapt to the Premier League and from where he was playing and stuff. And that's my only little, that's my worry in terms of things breaking down, especially if he sort of keeps it the same. So we had Minamino on the left last night, didn't he? So I'd be more than happy with the diamond diddle. However, I don't think Klopp will be doing one as much as I'd like to think it. I think he'll be doing maybe, like I said, I think he might do Oxlade-Chamberlain for Milner in midfield. Wouldn't surprise me if he throws Curtis left side. Now, whether that changes much, I don't know. I think you do need Ox in midfield, though, for, like Fuad said, those sorts of physical battles and winning it there. I think he's stronger than Curtis. But listen, that might be an option as well to try something a bit different. I mean, I don't think he's really got many options. Like, all the stuff we're talking about is quite left field for Jurgen Klopp in terms of changing formations. He's done 4-2-3-1 the odd now and then, but we're not talking about the ideal 4-2-3-1 where we've got Bobby, Jota, Salah and Mane. This is like a whole different, like, who'd even play in that? We're talking about potentially putting two fullbacks up there. Was he Nico Williams has played in a front three this season? Like, if I'm being honest, I have no idea what he's going to do. All I know is that off his press conference, he said the exact same team is available. So that's all we've got to work off. And I am wondering whether you might see maybe Minamino dropped to the bench on this one. I'm not too sure, just because, like I say, I just don't back him against the side like Brentford in terms of like just the physicality of them. I don't know. That's just my opinion.
No, I think it's fair. He referenced that when Minamino went out on loan, that part of the reason that he didn't get as much game time was because of his literal height, and he wanted Liverpool to be, you know, just literally taller in some games. So I think that's fair enough. Fuad, if we're not going with the diamond diddle, I think, you know, the way Lizzie says it there in terms of having Curtis in the front three and Oxlade-Chamberlain in the midfield, I think that concerns me a little bit, just because I'm not sure how keen I am on Jota being pushed out to the right. I think Jota operates better off the left, really. And I think, as I said before, one of the things that I thought was an issue last night was him and Minamino just operating similar positions. And obviously, I think if you take Minamino out, that clears a bit of space up for Jota. But I still think there's just an issue with him being pushed out to the right there. And I think he probably does want to be off the left more. And that's where you can play Chamberlain on the right, and you can have Curtis Jones in midfield, and probably give you similar levels of balance, if not the physicality that Lizzie says before.
Yeah, I think it might have to be one of those where, I think you said before the show, didn't you, Josh, about, you know, as much as we don't like it, and a lot of people are very much against Chamberlain being in that front three, you might just have to go with it. And if you have Curtis in the midfield, you know, I do feel with Curtis, yeah, you have a little bit more of that creative ability in terms of picking a pass, beating a man. I think that's the thing, you know, Keita does so well. Again, we're talking about people that we literally can't play, but, you know, his big strength is being able to beat a man really naturally and really quickly and in tight areas. And I think Curtis has got a bit of that as well, and that might be what's needed. I do think as well, you know, whatever you do, that there's got to be a little bit of almost inviting Brentford out a little bit of whatever shape they're in. And you know, they aren't a team that fully sits back in the little bits that I have seen of them. You know, they do apply pressure in the right moments, but I think Liverpool will have to try and figure ways of kind of tempting them out of their shell a little bit and then kind of exploding forward. And I think you can do that with the pace of Oxlade-Chamberlain on the right. And, you know, it might be one of those games where, you know, we kind of look at the end of it, if Chamberlain does play on that position, and we go, you know, he didn't really do anything. But there might be a lot of him, you know, decoy runs and pulling people away and just being a little bit of a distraction out on that side. And obviously, you know, doing bits as well, cutting inside and interchanging a little bit. But I think you can sort of leave, you know, you can leave that to Jota and Firmino a little bit more about interchanging in that central position. And if, you know, one thing that was good last night was Firmino was the one coming out a little bit and receiving the ball, which we will definitely need him to do more of, I think, on Sunday, and sort of allow Jota the space to kind of run in behind a little bit and get into those kind of poaching positions where he's been so good. So, yeah, I just keep thinking back to the idea of Jota being so important in this, because he is also the one with that little bit of a burst of pace. He's not the quickest over long distance, but he is the one with that little bit of explosive pace in forward positions. Just seen a quote here from James Pearce that Origi has been outside and running, so, you know, hopefully that means he's not too far away. I don't know if that puts him in for Sunday, but, you know, that's something that they could definitely look forward to adding in the next couple of games after this one.
Yeah, I mentioned Plan B's before, and Divock is definitely one of the better Plan B's you can get, because, as Lizzie said in the first part of the show, he's just a mad fella. So we all love a bit of Divock, don't we? I think we'll round off with our score predictions. Then, Mike, I'll come to you first. Your prediction for this game?
Oh, God.
I need more than that, Mike. I need a better start.
Come on, positive, Mike.
you're always back to Neds, but I, from what I've watched last night, I think it could be tighter than what we all would like. And by the way, it could still be... I'm probably going to say 2-0, because I can just see us grinding away to it. Last night will go a long way to helping them know what you need to do and stuff like that. And I can see it being tight. That's all I want to say at the minute, is I can see it being tight, but I do fancy the Reds to knuckle down and just about get through. I don't think it's going to be the most... Look, I hope I'm wrong. I hope they go out there and you know, and blam them all over the gaff, and we win 2-3-4. But I just see it being a bit of a struggle coming to terms with the, you know, the newer way we've got to play for the next 2 or 3 weeks anyway. And I imagine it's going to be one of them ones where, you know, the first goal, the later it comes, the worse. So I think if we can start well, I think it'll be a bit more comfortable, but I just feel like it's going to be tight, because Brentford are going to come, going to have a good plan, and they, you know, they'll have a good go. And I, having said all that, I still think Liverpool will win. So I'll probably just err on the side of 2-0.
Lizzie, do you think it'll be tight, or do you reckon the Reds will blam them all over the gaff?
If Jurgen Klopp does not come out and say that in his post-match press conference, we blam them all over the gaff. Honest to God, missing a trick. The best, probably one of the best sort of well-explained, like best explanations I've heard, you know, for batting in a team, blam them all over the gaff. I think Mike gets man of the match already for that. I was going to say 2-0. I feel quite confident about them not scoring, in that I feel like the game will go, to our dismay, a bit similar to what it did against Arsenal. But I'd like to think they'd worked out a couple of kinks and stuff by then. And listen, we're talking about being worried about them on set pieces, but no matter how little Diogo Jota is, I'll always back him to score a header, do you know, against anybody. I'm not bothered. So, yeah, I am going to go for a 2-0 as well.
So how do we blame them all over the gaff or what, mate?
You know what? I had 2-0 as well in my head at the beginning, but I'm very much into the idea of blaming them all over the place.
Fuad.
Gaff, sorry. Sorry, everyone.
Come on, Fuad. Not scouse enough, look.
I've turned it off for this one. I do struggle to... It's really not the positivity I wanted to end on, but I do see Liverpool struggling to score more than 2 goals a game in this little period, and that's fine, you know, that should be more than enough. So, you know, I'd like a 2-0, but I'd like a bit of individual brilliance to score the first or something, you know, just so there's that little bit of lift, and if it comes from Firmino, that'd be perfect, or even Jota. But yeah, you know, I'm back for it, so you know what I mean, I'm sure they're gonna put performance. They fell off a cliff as soon as I left, so let's hope that that puts them gives them a bit of confidence.
Yeah, I hope they've got Fuad's flight details pinned to the dressing room wall. Let them know early.
Yeah.
In the coach.
Yeah, updating on Fuad's position. He's just around the Manchester airport. As everyone who listens to the show knows, I'm usually not a shithouse, but I feel like the Reds are really, really testing my resolve at the moment. So I'll just clean sweep it, as everyone else has said, and go with a 2-0 for the Reds. I think the final thing to say is, any diamond diddles there, Jurgen?